Hello and welcome, dear creatures, to our first sets of talks. And now a quick info about the translation. Der nun folgende Vortrag wird ins Deutsche übersetzt. Ihr findet die Übersetzung im Menü eures Videoplayers oder auf der Webseite unter dem Videoplayer im Tab Formats. Cette conférence sera traduite en français. Vous trouvez cette traduction dans le menu de votre lecteur vidéo ou alors sur le site web en dessous du lecteur vidéo dans l'onglet Formats. And exploring the virtual event such as RC3 is difficult. So please help us out. Drop the Herald News Show hints or interesting stuff under the email address newsshow@rc3.world or go to the blog newsshow.rc3world. And we have a Q&A section for this talk, the mission of the MV Louise Michel. There is the possibility to ask questions. And when you want to leave us a question, use the IRC channel, which is also linked below, or go to Twitter or the Fediverse using the hashtag RC31. That is RC number 3, letter O, letter N, letter E. RC31. And now the upcoming talk is the mission of the MV Louise Michel. Feminism will be anti-racist or it won't be. Search and Rescue is not standing for SAR is not standing for Search and Rescue as going by the Louise Michel crew. It also stands for Solidarity and Resistance. The talk will be about the mission of the rescue vessel Louise Michel and why smashing borders won't work without smashing the patriarchy and the other way around. The talk is given by a small group of people who run, together with many others, the high-speed lifeboat MV Louise Michel, which patrols the Mediterranean. And now, let's go live to the bridge of the Louise Michel. The stage is yours.
Hello, thanks a lot for the invitation to have a slot at the CCC 2020. Although we had almost no time to preparation, we are anyway happy to sit here today and give you a small impact about what the Louise Michel project is or can be. So there's much more than could be said in 40 minutes. Hello everyone, we are sitting on the bridge of the lovely Louise Michel. At the moment we have 6 crew on board, and here in the room are Leona, Anouk, Jakob, Laurence and me. I'm Hannah. And we will give you a short introduction about what the project has been done in the last 12 to 14 months. And then we will try to make a slide switch and talk about mostly sexist boundaries.
So yeah, as maybe many of you already heard, this ship is a search and rescue ship. And was bought nearly 1 year ago. It all started with Banksy writing an email to Pierre Clamp, offering a ship. And then after a few discussions, the ship was bought and a group of a few people put many work, many effort in it to prepare a former Navy, French Navy ship into a search and rescue vessel. The preparation, when nearly all of them were done in France, and the ship was brought then to Burriana in Spain, and is turned from a French Navy boat into a pink disaster, and is now Again in Burriana, Spain. We left for our first mission on the 18th of August, went to the Central Mediterranean Sea in front of the Libyan coast, and were involved of rescuing almost 300 people. And after returning to Spain, the ship didn't get detained or didn't get seized, what we kindly, or we were expecting this. So we are not detained, but the ship is blocked. And now, after the first mission, a group of people decided to keep the ship, to get the ship ready again for our next mission. And that's basically what we are working on right now, like getting a new registration, because Louis Michel was registered as a so-called pleasure craft, as a motor yacht, which was no problem at all, because it's obviously a pleasure craft and a motor yacht. So as long as authorities, well, they didn't know that we were supposed to do search and rescue, it was no problem at all. But after they found out that we are doing search and rescue, we lost our registration and are now working on getting a new one to be able to sail again. And yeah, so we are now in harbor doing shipyard time. That means preparing the ship, working on problems, fixing stuff that needs to be fixed on a ship, which is quite a lot. And yeah, also doing a lot of paperwork, because as many of you also may know, search and rescue is very political, and there are many political issues, let's call it like this, that needs to be fixed. Many stones they put in our way, and yeah, that's what we're working on right now.
In the short description was already said that we don't understand SAR, that normally stands for search and rescue, that we understand this SAR as solidarity and resistance. That means, well, what we are trying to say with this is that we are understanding our activism or our acting not as a humanitarian thing, but as political. And this is inspired by the central critic that humanitarian work, which is, just to say this kind of in short, the other medal or the other side of the same medal, so humanitarian work tries to milder what capitalism, patriarchy, or racism do to and with the world. And it makes the shit that's going on looking better, but it's making invisible what all these structures of power cause. So this is racism, this is death, this is they make the structures of inequality and power invisible.
And this is kind of what also our project is about, not only going to sea saving lives, because obviously the EU is not willing, or I mean, they would be able to do it, but they are not willing to save lives or to stop people from drowning. So we are definitely, this is part of our project, but part of our project, or the main part of our project, is definitely to put some effort in changing the whole system, because as Hannah already said, like capitalism and definitely racism, they cause the death that we can see at our borders, especially in the Mediterranean Sea. So without capitalism, without racism, and also without the patriarchy, there would be not such a problem. Like, there wouldn't be so many people drowning at sea. And this is, that's what we mainly understand, what we should do, like putting effort in changing the system.
And that also means that our actions have to be followed by the doubts, and have to be reflected. So we have to reflect on what we are doing, and not get caught by this stupid game or this disgusting game that is played by national states, by the European Union, or by all those authorities who are trying to force us to work on stupid registrations. So what the main situation is for us and also for all other rescue ships is that we are blocked, that we are hindered, that the European Union stopped all their rescue programs they had. The Central Mediterranean is still the most deadly border in the world, but it's not the only deadly border in the world. Borders at all are killing and causing death and torture and suffering. And borders are imaginary lines, or boundaries are imaginary lines that have been set up at some point, and it makes the people believe that there is something that has to be protected. But it's the national borders, or the borders of states, are not the only borders we are struggling with. And there are also borders between, or boundaries that we have to cross, like gender, like racism, like capitalism, like inequality. Maybe I can hand over.
Yeah, like what Hannah already said, like the boundaries not only exist between countries and states or even continents, but also between human beings, between people. And this is something we are also seeing like a lot on ships. All of us worked on different kind of ships, and we've seen a lot of borders, a lot of boundaries, whether they were quite visible or most of them were more invisible between people. And the reason for that, or the reasons for those boundaries, I think you said them already, are mostly gender, the color of the skin of people, the level of education people have, and all this stuff is causing boundaries between people and borders between people. And we as a political project, we are not only trying to fight the borders between countries and helping, or we're trying to put effort in helping people across those borders between countries, but also helping people and forcing, or not only forcing, but challenging ourselves to cross those borders that society teaches us to live within. So we are also trying to, as I said, help people, but also challenging ourselves to cross those borders that exists in our head and that are very invisible from time to time. But when you work as a crew, they get, you can feel them. You can't see them, but you can feel them.
And this is maybe something that we can say as one of our main understandings. So we don't see, when we talk about migration, or when we talk about people on the move, so migration is everything. It's also migration when I move from Berlin to Spain because I think I like the beautiful or the warm weather more. This is also migration, but it's not fake like this.
And I mean, the weather is quite nice. We are in Spain right now, and it's just wonderful to be here, to be honest.
But this is also migration. Migration is also when you move from the landscape or from the land site to the city, but it's not framed as migration. And I think it's always a difficulty to go somewhere else. And people who are crossing the borders of the European Union, we don't understand this as fleeing people who need our urgent help and support, but we understand this movement as a kind of challenging borders. So because I don't accept these imaginary lines that they were told that they are not allowed to cross. Freedom of movement is a basic right of human beings and should be like this. And this is something that we should stand for. And so then the people always say like, okay, there's e.g. an institution like Frontex that is a policing military organization. And in 2011, they were told to accept a new rule that means they are not allowed to do pushbacks. Because I do pushbacks, But what else do we expect? So we have someone who's controlling borders, and we expect that these people controlling borders will say to someone who wants to cross it, oh, you're not allowed. And they expect that the opposite will say, ah, oh, yeah, cool, I will go home again. That's not how it works. And this leads to a situation of violence, because as soon as this border is not accepted and someone crosses anyway, it will have an effect. And that's what we are facing at the moment. And at the very moment where sorry, I need a second, I lost my point.
You were talking about the moment that people cross borders without having the permission to cross them.
Yeah, but I lost it, it's just gone.
So maybe I can jump in until Hannah finds her point, and I think her point was pretty good. So I would love her to get back to that. But when we were preparing this talk, we also talked about who is even able to draw the lines as borders. Like, for example, Frontex is protecting the border between, for example, African states and European states. But there are so many other borders, and we figured out in our heads that it's always the most powerful position who's able to draw those lines as borders. And when it comes to borders or boundaries between people, that it's also again the most powerful position that is drawing this line, and this should be changed. So it should not be this powerful persons deciding where the boundaries or the borders are, and who is allowed to live within which border. Like, for example, cis men decide this is the border between a male and a female person. Who's deciding this? This is just stupid. And same for borders between countries. Like, European state is deciding, so this is the line, and I'm a European person, so I'm allowed to live within this line, and all of you should just fuck off and stay outside. And you can just put this into many, many different situations, I think.
Borders are a matter of distinction, and it separates people from each other. So while it is saying you're different than me, because you are a male and this is a female, or because you are white and it's black and that's your passport and that's your passport, and maybe you don't even have a passport. And we are mostly talking in our crew about gendered borders. And this is something that makes sense when we understand a ship as a place or as a space of hierarchy, of patriarchy. That is, so it brings bad luck when you have a woman on board. That's the story that's told. And we had this talk also yesterday that we have a funny fireball that you can throw into the fire when there is a fire, and then will explode. And there's a picture on it, and you see a male who is throwing it like very nice and slightly into a fire.
He's definitely the hero of the situation.
As it is.
Yeah.
And there is a photo, there's also a pictogram of a woman, and she's putting this ball from the top into burning oil.
Very nicely.
Very nicely. She's smiling. And this stands for something that we are facing when we as not cis males enter a space like a ship. We notice every day that we are kind of in the wrong place. We notice that it's a different when you go alone through a port. We have all these visible things that we can talk about. So when you have a male chief engineer, it's a male chief engineer, and you can say this is a powerful position. But there are so many things that you can't see that clearly.
Yeah, so there are these visible boundaries, but also like invisible boundaries. So we were also talking about what is changing when you have, for example, cis men coming on board the ship. what does this create? Like, what feelings change and how feelings change and how behavior also changes? And what does it make with the whole crew? And maybe all of you also have situations in mind when you were only, for example, cis female or flint persons in a project or in a room, and how this was, how you were working together, how you were living together. And as soon as a cis man is entering the room, the project, how this is changing. And this is also about boundaries between people, I think.
And it's challenging us a lot. So always when we try to crew mostly flint people, so we try to turn the usual, what is the Normalverteilung?
The usual Normalverteilung, sorry for the English speaking persons. I have no idea.
So usually these rooms are structured that if you have women on board or flint people on board, that you have like one or two and the rest are cis men. And we
maybe also saying that on many, many ships, the flint person is doing the crew care, or the, for NGO ships, it's the guest care positions. Like many medical departments are made of, we can say it like of women, and guest care and crew care is like are mostly female positions. But when it comes to engineers or captain or officer positions, this is mainly cis male positions. No, those are mainly cis male positions.
Yeah, and that was what I was about to say. So we are doing crewing for the ship, and we try to crew mostly flint persons. And that also means that we can open the doors, or that we are kind of the doorkeepers, and we can open the doors for those people who usually have it much more difficult to enter such a project or to enter such positions that they can take over when they are entering Louis Michel. But of course, it's a story about being exclusive. And we are struggling a lot with the fact that we are still working in a surrounding that is super masculine dominated. So always when we are looking for people who can take over the powerful positions, like being a captain, an officer, a chief engineer, we are having a wide range of cis men who offer their support, but on the other side there's no one. And this is something that is really a problem, and it takes us much time to deal with the situation, because we really want to stick to this idea of creating a kind of as possible that could be a kind of safe space. And because we experienced that the surrounding and the climate on the ship is definitely another one when you have a most flint crew. So there is more space you can give for trust, because people come and say when they don't trust themselves to do something, or when they don't feel comfortable with something, there's much more talking, there's much more reflecting. It's super easy to hand over jobs when you have a climate that allows not to know. When you have a climate that allows you to be weak, because this is a ship, and when it goes out and there's a problem that no one said, like, oh, I made a mistake, but maybe I just cover it with something.
No. Don't do it.
Don't do it. And then it's important that someone comes and says, I don't know how to do it. And
maybe this is, or this is at least what we have seen during the last month when we were working together on this ship as a new crew, and with many different people coming from different countries, from different environments, that, or at least it's my experience, I don't know, what about you, that it was many times it was, or it were women asking for help or being less self-confident and trying to like double check, when it was on the other hand, like men always jumping in, like being much more self-confident. And maybe it's for reasons and it's totally fine, but I think this is how we grew up, how we got educated, and what society taught us how we should be, like women always being, or many times being, very or less self-confident than men are. And this is something we try to challenge on this ship, like empowering women to be at least as self-confident as the men are, or as the men trying to go, try to be.
Maybe we should come to an end. So I think now we are at the point where we can talk like a lot more about all these little lines that we are crossing every day. And it's not just about dishwashing and taking care of the engine room.
We can talk about a lot about the engine room because our chief engineer has his day off, so he's not here. And we can say a lot about him.
But I think for all kinds of political action, the main thing is that we have to stay, and maybe sometimes we also have to improve it. The enmity with the circumstances, and by keeping the friendship to the world or with the world. And so we are trying to create a kind of an open space by never accepting any fucking kind of water that is dropping or crossing our ways. So we have to reflect, we have to force ourselves to step about this, or to cross these borders, to step over it, and to not getting lost or desperate or frustrated. And this is what we can be. So we can create a space where even when we are blocked, and it always feels kind of senseless to be stuck in port, sitting around, don't know what you are doing. Because while we are sitting here and everyone's talking about this lovely pink little ship that tries to challenge European borders, we are in the end, we have to say we are blocked. But somehow we also have to deal with this frustration of we have to go on. So there's no possibility to say like, okay, they forbid us to do this, so we can't accept that. But at the same time, we always have to challenge ourselves. And we always have to support ourselves. And we have to understand ourselves as part of a social movement. And this is why we really appreciate to get some questions from the audience, to get something more than this limited space we are living in here.
Yeah, maybe as a conclusion, we can say that we are not only fighting or dreaming of a world without borders between countries, but also for a world, or we have this vision of a world without borders between humans in any kind, in any way.
Thank you.
That is a nice ending of the talk. Thanks so much for telling us all that. And I can relate the virtual applause you're getting from the audiences. You can sadly cannot hear that, but I am sure that there's a massive feeling of gratitude and thank you from all of those who are watching, and I've got some questions for you from the audience. And if we've still got some minutes left, so when you have an additional question, use the IRC link below the video, or use Twitter or the Fediverse using the hashtag #RC31 in letters. So hashtag RC number 3 letters O. N-E. Then our signal angel will put that down in the pad so I can ask the question. And the first question coming into you for you is, have you had any direct confrontation or other experience with Frontex officers or boats?
Maybe I can answer the question. Yes, definitely a yes. When you go to the Central Mediterranean Sea, when you go in front of the coast of Libya, for example, you can basically nearly every day see Frontex airplanes crossing, like searching for boats, searching for NGOs, what the hell are they doing there? And yeah, so it's from what I experienced during the missions I went on, it was mainly airplanes that were searching for example, boats in distress or people on the move and giving this information. Unfortunately, not to NGO ships, for example, or informing coast guards in the way like, okay, those people need help, but informing, for example, the so-called Libyan coast guard to go there to push the people back. That's definitely one of the main experience I made with Frontex, like organizing illegal pushbacks.
Okay, so most of it was plane sightings and not direct contact with personnel or ships in touch and distance. Okay, so the next question is more of a technical side. I think the core of the question was about how to grade situations, but I trying to read that out. I think something is lost in the translation. I hope you see what that means, but take it in a good meant spirit. How do you define a maritime emergency ship wreckage? Do you already take action for a dinghy with a working motor and rescue them, or is it only about situations where people's life is crucially endangered? Where is there some guideline that you can?
Yes.
Oh.
Great.
What's happened, Toto?
Ask her this question.
What?
Yes.
It's not our internet, isn't it? No, we can see it again.
No, I think it's not our internet. I think it's just the audience. Let's go.
I just saw the chat explode with all the technical stuff. So many good questions I would like to ask, but yeah, technicalities are the great dictator, and we are allowed to go 4 minutes over, right? I'm preparing to go 4 minutes over.
Okay, good.
When we'll ever be back. Give me a go and then I start. So, second question. Maybe something is lost in the translation, but take it in a good spirit. This is about technicalities. How do you define a maritime emergency ship wreckage? Do you already take action for a dinghy with a working motor and rescue them? Or is it only about situations where people's life is crucially endangered?
As soon as you enter the Central Mediterranean Sea and try to make it from, e.g., Libya to Italy with a dinghy with a small engine, even if it's working, it's a distress case.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's not only if the engine is broken down or if there's already water coming in, but those dinghies are normally super crowded and you never know about the weather coming up because... Me personally, I always had this idea of the beautiful central Mediterranean Sea with nice weather and no waves at all, but that's definitely not the case. So, yeah, I think it's not always about the super dramatic scenes, but as Hannah said, as soon as you enter those boats, this is not a good idea.
And it's quite a distance and it will take several days to get there, right? So it is not a pleasure cruise or something.
No, I would not say so. Not in general.
Okay, next question. Is the crew also trying to overcome hierarchies on board? Means are they trying to find structures that work without classical captains, etc?
Yes.
And then I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So there is a legal side of the things. And when the ship is on the sea and when it's operating, the person who is responsible is always the captain. So the person who's facing all the legal consequences are those in powerful positions. And this is something that we have to keep in mind. But for all decisions that are made on the ship, it's not up to the captain or the Louisette who's the coordination on a mission, or to the few powerful positions we have. Decisions get made by all, and we are trying to keep it as flat as possible. And of course, everyone's allowed also to say
his or her opinion.
His or her opinion, and it's going to be acknowledged.
But we have to be honest about that. We have to challenge ourselves to make this running, to work like with this flat hierarchies. We are on it. We are far from perfect, but we are trying to improve ourselves every day.
Good. Okay, from the nice people of the Signal Angel crowd have written me down another question. Have there been other attempts to sabotage your work except the legal challenges of the ship license? Maybe attempts to distract you from complicated work, maybe even algorithmic driven behavior recognition or something. This is a more of a technical question, yeah.
Uh-oh.
I think I didn't really got the question, but to be honest, this legal side of the things is quite effective. So there was once the question if we can't just leave as a pirate ship.
Without a flag.
And if we do so, that's an invitation for all forced power, or for all, what is it?
Armed
forces to enter our ship. And this is quite effective. And I think the main problem is with all kinds of repression, and that's how police work also works, is that it is not just trying to block you or to sanction you, but it's also about destroying structures. And this is what we have to work on in all the structures we are organizing, to not let them destroy our networks, our connections, our relations and everything else.
Okay. So this legal action works really, really well. So I've given some context for this. Do you think that you're constantly surveyed by others so that they can throw sticks into the spinning wheels?
We definitely have to keep this in mind, like all the time. We would not talk about very sensitive stuff, or we are trying really hard to protect our data. And yeah, so, but I mean, we are not sure about this, but we have to keep this in mind. Or we're keeping this in mind.
And there's another question about the hierarchy on board. More specific, what decision-making processes do you use on board? Do you want to give us some insight on that?
Yes, of course. We are organized with a small crew, like a core crew, who's coordinating and is also kind of decision-making. This is sometimes a problem, but the ship always works independently of this crew. Oh, this core crew, and the crew who is on board is organizing themselves, so they can organize themselves as having a very structured day, like everyday morning meetings, or try to find other ways. So at the moment, the situation with the current crew is that we have our construction sites that we are working on, but everyone is free to organize themselves. So if they want to work up to 11 in the evening, they are more than welcome, but we will stop them at some point because we don't want, we have an anti-burnout policy, so then they also have to start later. So no, we don't really have a plan, but we are trying to give the communication to those, or the organization to those who are doing it. That means the ship organizes itself, and the core crew is trying to care about the organizational sides of the things. That means caring about money, about the registrations,
the legal aspects.
But at least we are always giving a big thing or a big part of our responsibilities that we have as a core crew. At the moment, Leon and me are part of the core crew, and the ship crew is doing their own organization together with us. So, yeah.
Yeah. For information for the studio, I'm planning to go 4 minutes over, and I'm already one over, so there's room for two more questions. After having rescued people, do you social distance them because of their unknown health status? This is a corona-related one.
Yeah, lovely. I'm so happy to talk about this.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, great. Finally. So, after the rescue, we tried to wear masks and to hand over masks to our guests. And for sure, the guests, it was mandatory for them to quarantine when they came on land in Italy. And we tried to make everything possible to keep the guests healthy, like protecting them from our possible infection, but also trying to protect the crew from getting infected. So this is a small boat. We have to be realistic. It's not possible to social distance 2 meters. This there's no way. But we do everything possible to protect us and protect other people.
And I think we have to add to this that this corona thing is used from the authorities to stop us, because they say it's not possible at some NGO ships to keep the social distance, to ban the pandemic. And to be honest, when you look at the situation on the Mediterranean Sea, when you have the question about drowning or spreading corona, I would prefer spreading corona.
Yeah, so we think corona should not be an excuse to close harbors or to block ships, because as you all know, treat first what kills first, and drowning kills you first. And corona is quite a bad thing and very serious, but it should not be an excuse to close our borders.
And follow up on that, how do you, you said in your talk that the Louise Michel is a safe space. Do you advertise or announce this is in any way when you rescue somebody? Do you have a standard procedure where you say, listen, this is a little bit different as other ships or something like that? Or how do you approach those you are rescuing and inform them about that? I think it's not the first step, but how do you do this kind of information?
I would just say first that we are not a safe space, but we are trying to get as close
okay.
as
yeah.
possible. And the rest I have to hand over to Leona.
We are definitely talking to our guests about this, telling them that we are living all on the very close on a very small space, and that yeah, this is a safe space. So there's no place for racism or any kind of discrimination, weapons, drugs whatsoever. So this is definitely a topic, and it works. At least what I experienced, it wasn't a problem at all. So there was a huge respect from the people on the move and from the crew among each other. That was great to see.
So our time is up. Thank you so much for coming to us live from the boat, Luis Michel. It was a pleasure, and now it is my great pleasure to hand over to the Herald News Show, which will be live from Bielefeld Heideblümchen, and see you in the next talk. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.